Nick Wilson back on Afternoon Drive. 1 hour to go. Overtime with Jonathan Peterlin coming up later tonight. My guy, JP, we got plenty to get to on today's show. Obviously, the big news, Kevin Stefanski no longer calling plays in Cleveland. More football on the way, but basketball's back. Your Cavaliers are back. We're inside just a few hours here of tip-off for this season, and every single year that I've been back in Cleveland, we've had one guy on consistently to jumpstart the season. It's Big Shot Bob Robert Horry, seven-time NBA champion. He joins us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Robert Horry joins the show courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for NBA title, conference, division, and awards odds, plus updated win totals and player stats.
Robert, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. What's up, man? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's great to have you here. Obviously, last night, a big story out your way with LeBron James and Bronny James playing on the court. History was made. Just from your vantage point playing in the NBA, I'm just curious how you kind of saw how that transpired and you know, being able to have kind of a front row seat for that.
You know, it's a testament to LeBron James, first of all. The ability to keep his body in the shape and the things he's able to do mentally to keep that in shape, to play this many years, to have the moment to, you know, step on the court with his son, and it's something special. And I know a lot of people probably, you know, like me, I would love for that to happen. And so I know a lot of players would love that to have this moment, man, because that's something special. You know, Ken Griffey Jr. was there, senior and junior, so it was a fantastic moment for a lot of fathers and sons.
So I know your son plays at UCLA. I think, just saying, maybe 2 years it gets to the league. Maybe you want to retire for a couple minutes. Just thinking out loud here, Bob.
Hey, you better keep them thoughts to yourself. I can't even go up down the stairs without being getting winded. So, no, I'm good. My body's too beat up from 16 seasons.
Robert Horry on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So, obviously, you know, we got you here, and while the LeBron story is huge, here in Cleveland, we finally have some change. We got a new head coach. The roster, though, at large is kind of back the way it was last year. How much can a head coach change make a difference for a roster that last year it felt like there was some progress, but maybe ultimately, you know, things stood in their way of being the best version of that team?
Well, his team is still relatively young. You know, you think about they had injuries. Jared Allen, who's a big, big part of that organization. I know a lot of people outside says, well, he don't score or whatever, but he is so important to them. And of course, you know, my favorite guy, when I played with his dad, of course, he was hurt. He got hit in the face, and, you know, he got hurt. And so it's so many things that happen to this Cleveland Cavaliers team that's going to, you know, make them that much stronger this year. And of course, you got Spider coming back, and I just think it's just very important. Oh, I was talking about Darius Garland. I'm sorry, I didn't mention that. I think it's just so important for this team to just stay healthy, you know, and they got a young core. They got a lot of, they got an energetic team, so they're a good team, so they're going to make some noise in the East.
So I'm curious about that because it felt like the Knicks got the headlines. Obviously, Celtics, the defending champions, and the Cavs kind of had a quiet offseason outside of the Kenny Atkinson hire. So right now, going into the season, where do you see the Cavs stacking up in the East?
I see them about 4th to 15th, you know, because I just think, first of all, Celtics are just too strong. And you can't ever kind of Greek freak. And I don't know what's going on with the Sixers, whoever does. And so, but I see them right there in the Knicks, you know, they got the, with the addition of Carl Anthony Towns. I see them right there in that fourth or fifth spot. They're going to be battling because they got, you know, they got a team that can do some damage. Anytime you got Spider Mitchell on your team and a young guy like Evan Mobley, who I expect them to use a lot more in the system because, you know, Atkins tries to, you know, make the best out of everybody. I think they're going to scare a lot of people in the East.
So we've been having an ongoing conversation, Robert, for about, I think it's the third season now, for who has to be the best player on this team to be the best version of themselves. Is that still Donovan Mitchell, or this year is that going to have to be Evan Mobley at some point?
You know, we, a lot of people talk about Donovan Mitchell, his skill set. And the one thing that Donovan Mitchell needs to know how to do is to make people around him better. That's the only flaw in his game. He gets to some points right now where he thinks the most important thing is to score. You got to think about it. You had Darius Garland, all-star guy who's, you know, that was his team. You come over, now he's like a second thought and an afterthought. That can't beat it, way. You look at what the Dallas Mavericks did with Luka and Kyrie. You can have the same thing with those two. And I think it's going to be on Donovan Mitchell's part to make people better and sacrifice, because everybody else on that team is sacrificing. So he needs to sacrifice to make Caris LeVert better, to make Evan Mobley better, to make, you know, Jared Allen better, to make Garland better. He has to do that, but he gets in that mode where he thinks he needs to go 30 to 40 points. It ain't going to happen.
So
the team's not going to go far.
Sorry about that, Robert. So it's interesting you're saying this, because I think a lot of us felt that way last year at different points. Not necessarily do less Donovan, but that maybe we want to see Darius, you know, take that, be a little bit more aggressive, or Evan be a little bit more aggressive. And when it comes to that, is that solely on the players to have those conversations, or is any of this on Kenny Atkinson to let those guys know, like, hey, here are the moments where maybe Donovan defers instead of going full Donovan?
You do. You have to have that. The coach has to have that conversation with Donovan. And like, listen, Don, I'm on your side. I'm not trying to, you know, stop whatever your goals may be, but our goals is not your goals. It has to be team goals. And this is what we have to do, and show them film. You know, because I always say the film don't lie. And if you show film, say, if we do this, we execute this way, and then you can be a decoy sometimes. You can still get yours, because you think about all the greats like Michael Jordan, you know, Kobe, Shaq, and Olajuwon. These guys, Tim Duncan, these guys got theirs, but they still was able to let everybody else at the table eat too. And I think for me, you know, I love Donovan Mitchell. I love his approach to the game, but sometimes – you can see where he has a spin move and he takes a bad shot when he should have just dumped it off to Evan Mobley or Jared for the dunk. And I think for me, those are little moments that he don't understand, that just because you passed me the ball, gave me a little extra energy, gave me a little life, it means that you care about my ability to score. And it's things like that that make the team a whole and makes them want to play harder on both ends of the floor.
Robert Horry on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Robert Horry joins the show courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for NBA title, conference, division, and awards odds, plus updated win totals and player stats.
So, looking to Evan Mobley, and you know, I think, you know, he's a darn good, I mean, you know, top of the league kind of defensive player. The offense still kind of hasn't been where I think some fans were hoping for when we first saw him in his rookie year a couple years ago. In terms of that young man becoming the best version of himself, how much of this is, like, how much can guys be empowered, and how much did they have to have some of that natural dog in them as it relates to a kid like Evan Mobley, who sometimes people say maybe not commanding enough of calling for the ball, stuff like that?
Well, you got to understand, like, when you saw him his rookie year, what was different? Donovan Mitchell, right? Donovan Mitchell wasn't there. And so you got to understand that. It's like you can only eat if they let the guards feed you. And he has to take it upon himself. I know there'll be points where, you know, I played with Shaq and Dream. They would literally break the play. Like, yo, no, I need a touch. Give me the ball. And I don't know if Donovan Mitchell has that attitude. I mean, I'm sorry, if Mobley has that attitude. But he's going to have to, because there's going to be moments where he has the advantage and he's going to have to call for the ball and let them know. And also, it's up to his teammates to recognize that. You know, you think about Darius Garland, who's a really great point guard. He needs to break a play. He says, no, we got to get you a touch, big fella. Get to the post. And also the coaching, you know, the coach comes on, hey, let's get this guy a touch, you know, make him feel like he's involved in the game. So I said all that to say this, it's everybody's role. And more so, it has to be, you know, Mobley's role too, to say, yo, man, be demonstrative on the bench. Don't just be quiet, because closed mouth don't get fed. And there's so many players around the league that can take over a team or be good for a team, but they don't have that dog in them where they want to say, hey, feed me.
Robert, looking to outside of Cleveland here, Anthony Edwards had a heck of a run last year in the playoffs. He is still riding high. He's a hell of a basketball player, but he said here recently he feels like he would have matched up well against Michael Jordan. Agree or disagree?
He would have matched up well size-wise. You know, I love the fact that this guy has the gumption to think that his time is the best, that he's the best player ever. you know, you love the fact. I don't know if he's serious half the time or if he's joking, but you got to love it, though. It's straight comedy. And I think Anthony Edwards doesn't really understand how hard it was to play in our era because of the, you know, we had four games in 5 nights. We didn't have all this load management. You know, we didn't get hurt as much as these guys do. So it's a different era, and I don't think he recognizes. You know, everybody always said, "Oh, you play so slow." I said, "Yeah, it looks slow on TV, but when you got out there, we adapt to whatever situation it was."
All right, now I got to ask you, because I'm just going to assume, as a man who played, I think it was 7 years with the Lakers, won multiple chips with the Lakers, I'm imagining it doesn't sit right with you with the Celtics winning, I think it's their 18th banner. Am I taking you out of context there? Is that a fair thing to say?
No, you know, for me, I think what I did and the banners and stuff was fun, but for the most part, man, you know, we do it for love. The love of the game is so much more important than for me and the money and the stuff like that. So the love and the where it took me, you know, I think about being an ambassador for the NBA, where it has taken me for, like, all over the world, being able to meet different people. And it's just been, you know, the NBA opened so many doors for a little country boy from Alabama that I thought would never be open.
Well, all right. That was a very classy answer. Then I guess I won't follow up on it. So I am curious, though, with the Celtics, I think mm-hmm. there's a lot of folks looking at the Celtics and saying, who's going to stop them? When you look around the NBA, who do you think has the, whether it's the formula or the players, whatever it's going to take to stop a repeat, who do you think have the best chance this year?
OKC. I really think OKC has the ability to match up with them. You talk about it. We would bet. And we're talking about odds. You know, the Celtics are 13-4. OKC is, you know, 6-1. And I really like what OKC is able to give this summer. You know, take a card time from the Knicks because they need a big. They needed someone to battle in case they ran across a Embiid or they ran across a Joker or Anthony Davis. So they fill the void that they had. And I think that is going to be the team to watch. I think that is the team that might, you know, battle the Celtics for a championship if they stay healthy.
All right, Robert. So one of the big stories is Victor Wembanyama, year two. How does he follow it up? He's both most improved player and MVP favorites, depending on the book that you look at there. What are your expectations for year two of the 7'4" French wonder?
You know, as far as winning the MVP, you know, he's going to have to follow up with people. I think that's going to be the most important thing, because you think about what, if you don't have the best record in basketball this year, I don't think you're going to win an MVP. You know, that's going to boil down, I think, OKC, Shai Gilgeous, or, you know, Celtics, JT. But Wemby is the only player I've ever seen in my life where he makes people scared of him. You know, he, like, people can drive to the lane and not even shoot the ball because they're so afraid of him blocking the shot. And so he is a big-time game changer.
So when Giannis came along and had a point guard's handle at 7'1", I thought that's about as tall is just natural. That's as much as it's going to allow, right? And now we have a 7'4" guy with a guard's handle. At what point can we just stop? Like, is 7'4" as tall as you can possibly be with a point guard's handle? Or are we going to have like an 8-foot tall guy with a handle at this point in 10 years?
Hey, the funny part is this dude is still young. He might grow a couple more inches, but his skill set is unbelievable with the ball. You know, I thought at first, I said, oh, he's going to get ripped a lot because of the length of the dribble from, you know, from his hand, from his waist to the floor, from his knee is a lot. And so I thought guys would be able to get in there and to take it from him, but not in the case. He's just getting smarter. He's just getting better. And I think the addition that Paul George is going to – I mean, I said Paul George, the point guard, and Chris Paul, I think it's going to make the Spurs a little bit better. Let's face it, they're not a championship team, but they're going to make the team a little better because he's going to put people in the position to be better, and he knows the pecking order.
Robert, great stuff, man. Always, every time we get to talk to the beginning of the season, it's kind of our way. Again, I think this is 3 straight years now. It's kind of our way of jumpstarting the NBA season. So basketball's back. Big Shot Bob is back, and we appreciate you, buddy. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, great to hear from you. And go Cavs.
We'll take it. Big Shot Bob, Robert Horry on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Robert Horry joins the show courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for NBA title, conference, division, and awards odds, plus updated win totals and player stats.
Many a nice things to say about the Cleveland Cavaliers, and we'll talk about that in the return of the NBA next on 92.3 The Fan. Sure to stay tuned to my boy JP. He's got a doozy of a hump day show for you guys. I've been sitting on this one for a minute, guys. All right. Sometimes you need, sometimes you come out and you just talk about things when they happen. And because you're ready to do the work, you're ready to put it out there into the universe. And sometimes, like with this thing that we're about to talk about, sometimes you just need a minute to just sit with an emotion, a thought, a feeling. Right? Like just okay, how does this really make me feel? And how far am I really willing to go? Right? That's where I've been with this. So Sunday, let me just tell you, I know global warming is going to kill us all. All right? I know it's going to happen. All right? Or at the very least, it's going to make certain parts of this earth, which are currently very habitable, uninhabitable very soon. But man, is it working for us in Northeast Ohio. Like, the hedge bet that I had in moving back home is, if global warming is real, I'm saying that for like the 12% of people don't believe it's real. If it is real, Cleveland might end up being a tropical paradise. And I submit this entire month of October. Because if this is one of the bennies of global warming, God bless it. Drill, baby, drill. Because living in Ohio and getting 60-degree weather during October, through most of October, is a sensual experience. And so we've made the most out of it, right? Because when we moved to Wadsworth, we moved into like a smaller home, and it's going to get us. We're going to have cabin fever before you do, because we can't run away from each other, right? Like, this is, and we love our house. We're very excited. And obviously, in the very near future, we're hoping to buy a house. But like, we're very happy with our rental home, but we know that as long as the weather's nice, we're going to live that life as best we can. So this weekend, we really did it. I'll be honest with you, as much overwhelming at points as work has been, given the fact that I have a different host every day, and obviously Keith has become the producer, it's been a little overwhelming. I'll just be honest with that. It's overwhelming. As Jax took that personally. It's not about you, dog.
No, you said that Keith is the producer.
Well, Keith was the producer. Now he's the boss. Screw both of you. But I'm telling a story here. I'm spinning some yarn, you bastards. It's just a lot. And then you go through what, I'll be honest, guys, the first 7 weeks of the season weren't fun, because it's really tough for me to watch you guys fight each other. And social media is one element of that, right? And watching just any of the tributaries of the Deshaun conversation was exhausting, and it wasn't fun. And then to come out here and do the five-hour thing on, well, is Deshaun going to look like a functional quarterback this week? So that being said, you got to juxtapose that with, we've been really nailing it in the Wilson household of like being together and like spending time, like being where my feet are. Usually in football season, it's really hard. So this Sunday, after the Browns game, I had detoxed from just the craptastic thing we saw on the field, and we said we're going to carve pumpkins, because Saturday we got pumpkins, Sunday we got pumpkins. Sunday we carved them. And let me just tell you, I did a great job. I mean, maybe the best pumpkin I've ever carved. I'm trying to stay humble, because I know those pumpkin streets can get you real quick if you get ahead of yourself. I'm not arrogant about it, but I did a good job. That's all you need to know. And so I got done with my pumpkin first, put it on the front porch, and I went inside and started washing my hands. And as I was getting ready, because I mismanaged time, I'm like Kevin Stefanski of my own life, and had to order some dinner in Wadsworth to go pick it up, because we realized at the last second, it's carving pumpkins or eating dinner, and we chose to, or making dinner, we chose to just go ahead and order out. So anyways, I'm like getting ready to walk out the door, and Vanessa goes,
I wish you would have just seen what I saw. It's like, okay, what was that? And so these two kids who were friends with my daughters, they came over. And one of them, so my oldest daughter's 14, the boy, because it's a brother-sister, the boy's the oldest, he's 13. And she's like, I think he just asked for your daughter's number. And immediately I thought, I got to kill somebody now. Because I just, like, I know, like, listen, I get it. At some point, my daughter's going to date. And when she does, whenever she's ready for this, I hope she has the best life in the world when it comes to that. Like, I really do. Like, that's a weird thing for a dad to say, but, like, so much of the good things in my life are because one day I woke up, stopped being an ass clown, found a pretty girl, fell in love, and then the rest is history. So, like, I do want that for my daughter. I don't want it today. All right? I'll be honest with you. And granted, it's better that it's a 13-year-old boy instead of a 15-year-old boy, because the 15, I wouldn't have had a thought. It would have been the 15-year-old's dead. Like, it just would have been an act of, it would have been, you know, not guilty by reason of insanity. Because it just, there would have snapped, I'm a big rhinoceros, it just would have been done. Curtains. And I would have had, like, there would have been a civil suit, it would have been a hole to do. That's all I'm saying. And Vanessa's very taken. She thought it was very cute. And here's the problem. Can you not at least act like you fear me? Right? I get it. I'm a big goofy guy. If you actually know me, I'm the most harmless thing in the world. He doesn't know that yet. And so this, yeah, okay. Everybody have told this story. One of the reactions is, good for him. That's really confident. No. Yeah, I mean, it is confident. Too confident. You're 13. Don't be confident. You're supposed to be confident when you're 25. Not when you're 13. But this young man, let's talk about the level of disrespect here. He came to my house on a Sunday, on the Lord's Day. Yeah, I know I'm Christian, but it doesn't matter. But on the Lord's Day, and when I was within ear distance, is that a thing? When I was within walking distance, right? Within 20 feet, this little bastard walks right up to my daughter and goes, hey, can I have your number? You should fear me. And the fact that you don't fear me means your dad has not explained that that's not how you do business. You should have the common courtesy to do everything but come to my house and ask for my daughter's number. You should do it at school. You should do it if I'm not at the bus stop one day. You should do it at a party, right? Or at a dance. You don't walk. You might as well have made a pass at my wife. All right? Like, when you come to my house, when I'm there, alive, and you ask my daughter for her digits, it shows a lack of fear and a lack of respect. And so, I'll be honest with you guys, my immediate response wasn't great. Now, I didn't assault him that I know. Yet. No. So what I did was, I will be surprised. I will be honest. What surprised me about this entire thing is, I did become a little bit of a gorilla. Like, I'm a pretty thoughtful, insightful human being, capable of a lot of love and a lot of empathy. And when I walked out of my living room into our garage, so we have a landing, and then there's a step, another step, and then the garage floor. And I, seeing him, you know, like, we made eye contact. It was salt and Vinny's right away. Like, I saw right into his soul. Didn't like what I saw. He's 13. What are we doing here? But I immediately said, I'm not walking down these steps. The best visual I can give him, to start to give him an idea that this is not how men conduct business. You go behind a man's back to ask for his daughter's digits. That's as simple as it is. That's the way we did in the 90s. I think it was the 2000s. I didn't ask any girl out in the 90s. The 2000s. It's the way they did in the 80s. It's the way my father's fathers did it. You don't ask for the daughter's number when the big bear's on the prowl. Okay? Just basic respect, fear, and intimidation. So I jump off the landing. It's about a foot and a half drop. And guys, everything jiggled. But it looked wildly impressive because I am 6'4". And I am not under 300 pounds. And I saw the glint. I saw the fear. That's a good start. And my daughter, she's so sweet and she's so awesome. She kind of was like, yeah, I'm not. I told him to get rid of my number. No, I'm not dumb. So now I see the kid every day at the bus stop. I'm like the Sphinx. It's a total front. He has no reason to actually fear me. But from now on, I have to find a way to mess with this kid. So I've done a couple things already. I've done the dad voice, which is really inconvenient for all my neighbors at 7 a.m. when I'm like, hey, man, how you doing? He jumped. He actually did jump the other day when I did that. I didn't laugh because I'm a man of principle and I need to intimidate him. 216-474-0092. Can we just admit here? I get it. It's a new era. We want to be upfront about, no, not on this one. Go around my back, have the common courtesy to fear me, all right? And you're still going to get my daughter's number. That's fine. The point is, I realize there's nothing I could do to stop this ruffian, this hoodlum, this you know, first-rate ass clown from getting my daughter's number. But at least he could make me feel better about it by not doing it right in my face. Is he going to take my dog for a walk next? Like, I'm just wondering. Like, I mean, my two younger daughters, they're 2 years younger. They don't have cell phones yet. You want to take a pass at them real quick there, Chief? Like, how far are we going to go with this? Can I just get you on my side on this one? Is it bad form that this kid came over to my house when I was there and just in front of God and everyone on the Lord's Day asked for my daughter's number? And also, is it legal to strike him down with my bare hands? One more segment to go next on 92.3 The Fan.